Hello, welcome to another fine episode of the Tombstone Podcast. Podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever the hell we want to talk about. My name is Devin.
I'm Kevin.
My name's Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And we are going to go round robin, starting with Kevin. What games have y'all been playing? What are you excited for? You know the drill.
Well, I had a very rough week, so I just wanted to go and play something old as shit, at least to me. It's one of the earlier games I played. I went back and I started playing Wind Waker.
Ooh.
And the thing with that game is I have probably beaten it like 20 times, so I know where everything is to the T. And I know, and not only that, but I also play the HD remake now, so I know all the discrepancies between the two versions, and I'm like, oh, okay, wait, which version was that? So I'm basically a fucking strategy guide. To the point that, like, my brother bought one years and years ago. He bought a strategy guide for the game, and I corrected the strategy guide because it was wrong. The level to which I know this game. Yeah, there's a ship, and the strategy guide says it has one thing. I'm like, no, it has a heart piece. You know, like it's totally different. But it. That's the level to which I know the game, so I'm going back and just enjoying my time.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, because it's always cool whenever you just like really know a game inside and out. I've like Dark Souls was like that for a little bit for me, where I just kind of knew where most of the drops were and how to fight all the enemies and what have you. Mm-hmm. It just feels good.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's like a little like personal test. Like, how much of this can I remember? And I've so far I've been pretty much clearing out the game, and just kind of like, oh yeah, I can do this. Oh yeah, I can do that. And just kind of doing things scatterbrained. It's been fun. I like it.
What about you, Dominic? What you got for us?
Yeah, this week I actually got pretty sick, and I actually like lost my voice for like a day or two. So I was sort of holed up on my Switch just doing casual stuff like Binding of Isaac, and I had my Breath of the Wild cartridge in, so I was just hanging out with that. But I'm very, very, very excited because I think at the time of this episode's release, there's only like a week or two until Animal Crossing comes out, or maybe like 3 weeks or so, but it comes out in the month of March, and so we're finally in it. So hella excited for that.
Hell yeah.
I think I'm excited for that as well. It's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never actually played a game like that. What about you, Zach? What you doing?
Well, I'm also excited for the Animal Crossing, but 2 days ago, I picked up Final Fantasy XIV. I've been giving it a go. I don't know. I like MMOs, so it's fun, but we'll see if I actually stick with it. There's a lot to do.
Okay. I was wondering what your take was on that versus other MMOs.
I mean, it's interesting because you pick like a class, and then that later splits into like a job, which is basically a more refined version of your class, but you can switch at any point. So if you start and you start as a mage, and then you start leveling up, and then realize, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to go learn to be a rogue, you can just switch and start over, and all of your classes kind of stay and have their own levels. So, theoretically, you could have every class maxed on one character. So it's not like other MMOs where, oh, I want to play something different, start a new character at level 1. It's the same character, and it all just transfers. So
that's pretty interesting.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
ESO is kind of like that as well, where you can just pick up skills as you want to pick them up. I don't know if you can actually change classes per se, but like you can take a mage class and then easily just be a two-handed weapon mage.
Yeah.
Which it's pretty interesting.
I was going to say it reminded me very much of like Skyrim, where you can just sort of be good at everything if you really wanted to. Is it free or is it subscription and paid
subscription.
For? Subscription. Oh, okay.
Which is why I don't know if I'm going to be sticking with it, but we'll
see. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few games that I've picked up this weekend. I picked up Opus Magnum, which is a Zachtronics game. in which you have to, it's like you have to like build out these contraptions in order to make things, like make products. The whole point of it is that you're an alchemist and you're using this machine to make products. Mm-hmm. And it's, I've gotten through the tutorial and I got through the first level and I was like, this is a lot. I'm gonna come back to this later.
It gets to be even more, trust me. It just keeps expanding even up to the end. And then you do the optional shit and it expands more.
Yep. And then I also picked up Forza Horizon 4. Oh my god, okay. Such a beautiful game. It's so nice. I downloaded it last night and then played it until like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow.
It was just, it's so pretty. It's so nice. The only thing I have to say about it is that the characters are all goofy looking. Like you get to pick how your character looks and it's just presets that you get to choose from. And they just all look very dumb is all I got to say. They just all look very stupid.
Yeah. That's surprising. I haven't heard us talk about, or have you heard you talk about like a racing game like Forza or anything like that since we talked about like Need for Speed and Midnight Club and all the old like nostalgic games that we did. So I wonder if I might give it a shot then.
It's on Game Pass. So that's what I'm playing it on right now. Because that's why I also got Opus Magnum. And there's a few other games on there, like the Metro Exodus and Metro whatever. The Metro games are... Metro 2033, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Those games are on the Game Pass right now. And I think I'm going to be hitting them up. That's going to be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But today, what do we have going on? We got Breath of the Wild going on.
Yeah.
So Dominic, I believe this is you.
Yeah.
So you can go ahead and take the reins from me.
Nice. So yeah, absolutely. Breath of the Wild came out 2015, 2016,
17.
17. Okay. Yeah. It came out 2017. It came out on the Wii U and then it came out on the Switch. And
it was a parallel release.
Yes.
And the funny story there was they did GDC talk on Breath of the Wild and he was just talking about the process. And at one point he was like, at one point I got an email from Shigeru Miyamoto and it said this, "Hey, port it to the Switch. Okay, thanks." And so they were just like most of the way done, like, yeah, it's going to be on the Wii U. And then they were like, by the way, it's also going to be on Switch.
Wow. That's so funny. And I was going to say as well, it reminded me of the split release of Twilight Princess, because Twilight Princess was 06, 07 ish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the split release for when the Wii came out.
Yeah.
And when it was initially for GameCube and then like maybe a month or two later, it came out for Wii. And, the big craze there was, you know, with the whole technology of the Wii, it was sort of like one of the first, it was among the first, you know, not like a tech release, kind of how Skyward Sword felt, which we'll talk about a little bit as well. But in this case, it felt a little bit more like, you know, just in case if you're not able to get a Switch, you can still get your Zelda scratch itched, mm-hmm. you know, by and get it for the Wii U, which is what we did because we didn't get a Switch until a while after. So
yeah, honestly, it was almost kind of the opposite direction with this because they were making it for Wii U, and I think that there must have been a fear that since no one owns a Wii U, pretty much that they were like, well, put it on the Switch as well, so that maybe we can convince them to buy the new hardware and also this game.
Oh, I think it was totally for that fact of like, hey, buy our new hardware because we have our new game. But I appreciated that they still kept mm-hmm. their original idea for Wii U. But I mean, let's talk about the game itself. I mean, this was such a 180 and just sort of like a, we say it all the time, like a returning to their roots cliche, but it remains to be seen. I know we talked about in the overview episode that, you know, 30 years ago, we had a world in which you were thrusted in. You had no idea what was going on. You had no idea where to go, what to do. Very indicative of the classic RPG games that came about in that era. you know, they go back to their roots in that, in this case, they give you some story, of course. They give you a good bit of exposition. They give you a lot of anticipatory stuff as to what's going on. And then they say, with a couple tutorials, they say, welcome to Tutorial Island, or in this case, the Plateau. Have fun. And everything else is up to you. It's, you know, who you talk to is up to you. In which order you do things is up to you. And the game opens up so fast, even though you're on this little tutorial plateau, and you think it's massive. You know what I mean? Like the Great Plateau felt like such an adventure in itself. And I know when I picked it up, I was very story driven, and I was like, okay, let's get off the plot, let's get off the island, let's go do the rest of the stuff. But I remember my brother, he spent like 2 days and and never left the plateau. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, when I think back to my original experience and even going back and playing it again, the Great Plateau is one of my favorite parts because it's just this little, really tightly designed little playpen. And much like Joe, I just spent all this time like, okay, how does this work and how does that work and how does this? And then it was just like, oh, you can leave the plateau now. I was like, oh my God, there's so much shit to do.
Yes, yes. Once you leave the plateau, the game almost quintuples in size. And,
oh, more than that. It's
more than
huge.
Yes.
And one of my favorite things is how the plateau ends, is it just ends with your objective being placed. It just says, destroy Ganon. And then just lets you go.
Yes, and we'll get into story in a little bit, but I do love the direction that they took, kind of going back to the whole back to the roots thing. They give you the premise, and then they say, have fun, go explore. And that's what the game, to me, is mostly about. You know, it's... But let's talk a little bit about gameplay. You know, gameplay-wise... this game is fluid to the letter. It's physical to the letter. It's so vibrant and it's so easily it's so easy to maneuver. It's such a good feeling.
Yeah, it's very organic, for lack of a better term, at least on my end. It's just kind of everything makes sense and feels right for the most part, you know, like especially, you know, it's like, all right, fighting, if you hit the block button at the perfect time, it's like, oh, well, it's a perfect block, and you parry it. So it's like, the controls are simple, but, like, they're simple and they make sense, but they also feel really good, and you get a lot of diversity in how you can play from it. So it just kind of, the core loop is satisfying.
Before we get into any more, Zach, how much of it have you played?
None.
Okay. And then Devin, I know last time we talked about it, you said that you still haven't beaten it, but you've been playing a good bit.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've played hours and hours and hours of it. I think I'm trying to think of where I left off at. I want to say I beat all of the. I want to say I beat all of the, what are they called?
Sacred Beasts.
The Divine Beasts.
Sacred Beasts. Divine Beasts, yeah. I want to say I beat all of them, and I just never actually got around to going to Ganon and, like, fighting him, just because I was like, that doesn't seem that interesting to me. Like, just the whole, like, finishing part, the whole story part to me doesn't seem that interesting. The whole exploration, though, is what I like to play it for. That's really all I did, was just, oh, here's this thing, let me mark it on my map and I'll go there. Oh, here's this thing, let me go mark it on my map. You know, just finding a shrine, doing a shrine, then just kind of looking out on the horizon and seeing that there's more shrines around and being like, okay, let me mark this one, mark this one, mark this one. And eventually get around to getting to all of them, because I'm like, why did I mark this? Let me go back here. Oh, this is here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that I have a very similar thought process. Like, the story is kind of like, you know, it takes a back seat to the exploration and discovery. But I also will say that the final level, going through the castle is, at least going through the castle, very interesting. It's very interwoven.
Yes.
And like it's like this knot of level design, and there's like all these little secrets in there. And like, honestly, that's my favorite. One of my favorite parts of the game is running around Hyrule Castle.
Yes.
Because it's got awesome music the whole time. Mm-hmm. And two, it's just so tightly woven, and you're like, what's this? What's that? It's like the beginning, how I said the Great Plateau is super tightly designed. So is the Hyrule Castle. Those are like the two most tightly designed areas, other than maybe Divine Beasts. But I would say that those are better designed than even the Divine Beasts.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's the something I know one, just so we can get it out of the way, I know one complaint, Devin, that I know that you had, that we definitely agree with, or that I agree with, is about the lack of dungeons. I feel like they went a little, just a little overboard on shrines. And I think if they stuck to a little bit more of the diversity of dungeon design, I think it would be a top-notch game, even more so than it is. But
yeah, well, go with your butt.
But the biggest and best proof of that is how they designed Hyrule Castle, because it is exactly what I was anticipating when it came to a dungeon. There were secrets, there were winding paths, there were dead ends, there were consequences to those dead ends. It's just everything felt it when it came back to that tightly knit level design, it felt like a classic dungeon again. And I wish they would have done that at least maybe once or twice elsewhere.
Yeah, because I think back, and it's kind of a weird connection that I'm making in my brain, but I always remember this one random ass cave in Twilight Princess where it's long and it's forking paths and there's all these enemies. And it's just like, you just find this cave of no consequence and you just go down it, and you just get lost in it for a while. And that's just a feeling that doesn't happen as much in Breath of the Wild. There's no like exploring ruins or exploring temples, or it's all kind of outside. So it's all just kind of like big expanse. I feel like, personally, if it were, instead of four Divine Beasts and Ganon's Castle, I would prefer maybe like three things on the order of Hyrule Castle. If we had to like change the scope and perspective, because it was so much more fun to run around and just find shit than it was to figure out the puzzle box sort of design that we have in the Divine Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the arena, when you find the arena, you're like, what is this? Yeah. And then there's a Lynel in the center, and then there's just all of these, what are they called?
Lizalfos.
The lizard, Lizalfos. There's just a lot of Lizalfos all around, and it's just a winding staircase, mm-hmm. going up, 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 up. And it's like, wow, this is just really cool and really unique. It's just an arena where you get to fight shit. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
My problem, my problem is lack of dungeons. Like, I would love to see, because the shrines are cool. I like them. They're not the best. They don't replace dungeons. They're just kind of there to do stuff, to have little challenges. A lot of them are, you go into the shrine and you just get something, like you just get an orb. Mm-hmm. There's a good bit of them that are just go in there and fight a tough enemy.
Mm-hmm.
There's the ones with the gyroscope controls. Fuck that. Those are the worst.
Granted,
ever.
There are only like two of those, but they do suck.
Yeah, I think there's like two or three of them that I can think of.
There are only two that bothered me. The rest were kind of just like, all right, rotate this thing into a certain position and walk across it. You know, those are easy. It was like,
yeah,
those
are easy.
The one where you have to like flip the ball through the maze and blah, blah, blah. Which, yeah. By the way, yeah. if you want to fuck with that one, you just flip the whole fucking thing over.
That's what I did.
Yeah, that's what everyone does.
There's also the one with the hammer where you have to swing the hammer and hit the thing.
Yeah, that one.
You can't swing it straight. Like you have to like it's a weird way in that you have to swing it in order for it to go straight. And it just sucks. I got so frustrated. Like, I would just sit there and try to swing and, like, miss left, miss right, miss left again, miss left again. And then, like, barely tap it. And it's like, why? Why? Yeah. I legit got frustrated with it and had to sit it down a few times, come back to it, and be like, okay, there we go. Got it.
Yeah. I would say that those weird physics driven ones where it's like you have to finesse the physics, and not even just like with motion controls, but there are other puzzles that are solved by like finessing something in the physics engine, and it's like those are not satisfying to solve at all. They're mostly frustrating. Feels like you're cheating. Yeah, like there's the one where you have to use the time freeze on it. You have to hit it, and it has to land in the hole. And it's like, yes. This is just annoying. There's, like, yeah. there's no satisfaction there. It's just something I have to do.
Just playing golf. Like, I don't want to play golf.
that was a unique change that they added. That I think outside of the shrines, I think it worked well. And that was that your Sheikah Slate, your little iPad that. That gave you all the map information and let you take pictures and stuff like that. Had these runes with it that was essentially your like adventurer's toolkit outside of your outside of your items. It was a bomb that was circular or spherical that could roll on hills. There was a bomb that was square that didn't roll as much. And then there was cryosis, which allows you to freeze water. Stasis lets you stop some objects in their position, and then magnesis, which is of course a big magnet,
and then eventually
the camera. What was cool about all of those was that it really opened up a lot of the ways that you can solve problems in the game, and that was one of my favorite things about this was how much agency you had as a player to solve problems how you creatively solve them.
I will say that, like, the fact that they give it to you all right at the beginning is like a huge game changer, because I mean, just playing Wind Waker, like I mentioned in the opening, all the items have their uses, and all the items have their uses and their strengths and their weaknesses and all that. But like, when you go back and play it, it's like, well, there's no reason to go explore over there because I know I need the hookshot and I don't have it yet. Oh, I shouldn't go explore over there because that requires bombs and I shouldn't go over there yet. So like, not having all your items really stifles the exploration. The fact that they give you all of the items within the first, like, depending on who you are, half an hour, hour or more of the game, but like the very basic beginning of the game, they give you everything you need to do anything in the game. So right. It's like everything from there is just improvement, but you have the base tool set to explore and do anything you need to do.
And I appreciated that very much, because even the differences with Joseph and I, watching my brother play this after a while, and he gets to a shrine that I know the perfect way to beat it, and I was like, and I'm like, oh yeah, dude, get ready for this one. This is going to be a toughie. And then he does something totally fucking different. Like instead of, using a stick to like, hit this one thing this way and light a torch and do this, he just like bombs everything and blows shit up. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But either way, it solves it in the same way. And giving you all those tools in the beginning allows you to have that creative freedom at the end.
And that's also just a difference in puzzle design that this game has, particularly with the shrines more so than the divine beasts. It's just kind of like the solution is a physics driven thing. So it's like whatever like cockamamie bullshit you can do to get you up there is how you can do it. And like, I'll go through shrines and it's like, oh, I solved it this way last time. Let me see if I can do it differently. And I've solved certain shrines like three or four different ways. It's just this more open puzzle design. And that's to me where the puzzle design gets more satisfying in this game, is when it's, it is still critical thinking. It's figuring out what to do, but there are many things you can do.
Right, which is the essence of critical thinking, because it's the fact that it's the fact that multiple players will find different ways to solve problems, because that's human diversity, like cognitively. So it's the way that they were able to bring that those challenges in with Shrines was exceptional, and I think they did a wonderful job with it. However, when it came to those gyroscopic puzzles, and when it came to the tests of strength, as they called, either minor, major, and otherwise, that's where it was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, they were. I remember. It's actually a really good video. It was by Super Bunny Hop, and I think it was Everything I Hate About the Thing Everyone Likes. And it was it came out at the time that, you know, Breath of the Wild came out and no one was criticizing it really. He made it in the form of a limerick, and he highlighted the shrines at one point. And he was like, I think it was some ridiculous quantity, like 1/3 or almost 1/2 were like inconsequential. You know, it's like, yeah, there are 120 shrines, but like most of them don't matter. You know, most of them are either a test of strength or some sort of like blessing room, which are the ones that just give you the stuff and you leave.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So granted, the blessing rooms are typically served as a as after doing a quest outside of the shrine. So it's like you've already kind of solved the puzzle in a way. Mm-hmm. And now you're just getting your reward. You know, that's typically how the blessing shrines are.
Yeah. To me, the blessing shrines, the way that I've found them, were kind of like saving graces. They really were like blessings in my playthroughs, because there would be a lot of times where I would be completely like drained of my resources, and I'm on the mountain and it's snowy, so my character's constantly like losing health and I don't have any of the necessary materials for survival. And then lo and behold, whatever random name generator's blessing gives me a fire sword. And I'm like, oh shit, now I can fight in the cold again. You know, it came out in its own kind of funny RPG way, where it was like, we know that you need this. And depending on how equipped you are, depends on how actual blessed this blessing is.
Yeah, I feel like most of the time I would have preferred there be like an actual shrine in there, but I didn't view the blessings with any level of like disdain or disappointment or anything. Just because it's like, all right, well, like the journey, the challenge was to get here. You know, a lot of times it's in a remote location, or there was a challenge to even get in there. The ones that disappointed me the most were the tests of strength. Definitely. And those, I think most people would attest to that, just because it's the same thing over and over, and it's not hard. You know, at worst, it's a major test of strength and you just don't have weapons strong enough to kill them. That's like the worst case scenario. Other than that, it's not a problem at all.
Right. And it just it kind of does what we talked about with not only Skyrim, but like a lot of other games where it's hard for the sake of hardness, where like It knows that you're going to be in a position, like, by you coming to the shrine, you must have this. And the expectation is that in an open environment, you're expected to do it in such a way that gives you these materials to do the test of strength. And if you come in unequipped, or if you come in completely like with no unawares, the game's going to punish you. But it's for what reason? You know, it feels like these tests of strength should be a little bit more methodically placed, and maybe not so spaced out all over.
Yeah, and this is kind of the, I guess, double-edged sword of the design I highlighted in the beginning, which was, hey, we're going to give you everything that you need to solve any puzzle. At that point, your only filter is really difficulty. You know, the only thing that you can do to say, like, to show that you have progressed is to present a player with something that's just too strong for them, and then they can come back when they're strong enough, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, that to me, I've never been one to be a fan of, I guess, avatar strength, the strength of your character versus my skill as a player. I've never been a fan of that approach. I've always thought that I should be able to defeat any obstacle, provided that I have the knowledge. I always think of the knowledge being that sort of difficulty curve. You know, it's like, well, I don't know how to fight this thing yet, or I don't know the easy way to fight this thing yet. You know, I've always thought that knowledge was the best difficulty curve, and that's not really the case in this game.
Yeah, because in many cases it comes down to what weapons you have, you know, which in some cases can be a bummer, but in a lot of cases can actually pose a lot of challenges. But one either test of strength, or I consider this a blessing that we can get into, are these ads. Yay! Are these ads that are coming up to test your strength.
All right, ad break. Cool. Hello, and welcome back from those delicious, delicious ads. I'm going to continue our discussion. I'm going to just bring up one more thing about how the dungeons are in Breath of the Wild and how I would really like them to be in whatever Breath of the Wild 2 is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
My whole thing is I would like to see more stuff like Hyrule Castle, and the Divine Beasts are kind of bland, so maybe not anything like that necessarily. Although it's really cool that you can use the map to change the layout basically of the map. It like use the Divine Beast controls. That's really interesting, but they're all pretty bland, and you just have to go to these like terminals and blah 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 blah. It's like once you figure out how to do it, there's really no replayability with it, which sucks.
The analogy I hear a lot is that it's more of a puzzle box and less of a dungeon. So it's more like solving a puzzle than it is exploring. And to me, I always preferred exploring like a space.
Yeah, it's a different way to approach the idea of a dungeon, right? Because the Divine Beasts are supposed to be kind of like the dungeons, because that's what we get.
Yeah, but they focused on being a puzzle rather than a place of exploration.
Yeah, a true dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think moving ahead, I would like to see them. Okay, if they're going to keep our tools, that's cool. Maybe add one or two more, or change up how some of them work. Or I would get rid of, Cryosis? I would get rid of that one. That one's pretty much very limited, pretty useless.
Yeah.
I would rather that just be in an ice rod, and you can just freeze things like that, or you can use an ice rod to create a pillar. Sure, fine. Just move that to an ice rod and give us a different ability. And give us dungeons in which we, you know, you just kind of set us in there, and there's so many different options that we have, because the whole world, open world thing is amazing, and then you get to these little dungeons that are just like, well, the shrines and the Divine Beasts, which are just kind of lackluster for the most part. I would like to see actual dungeons, because you can't climb or anything like this. So like one of the main things in Zelda Breath of the Wild is that you can climb literally fucking everywhere, and then they put you in shrines where you can't do anything besides what they want you to do, for the most part.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens. I would like to see dungeons where it's more open-ended. You can create, you know, create updrafts with like grass that's around or something like that. You can climb somewhere. You can do all of this or that. Or, and sure, maybe have certain slippery surfaces that you can't climb in order to kind of sort of path people in ways that you want to go, but for the most part, you know, it's all pretty open. That's what I want to see. Like the open world, the overworld is fucking amazing. I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, on that note, I would agree. I think that their design leaned toward you know, more of a two things. One, it's more of a quantity than a quality thing. You know, we wanted to have 120 shrines to kind of fill up this gigantic map. And then, you know, it's like, all right, well, most of those don't matter. And then even of the ones that do matter, they're pretty simple. You know, I would have preferred much fewer things that were more individually interesting. And the other thing I would add is it seemed to focus, at least as far as like shrines and divine beasts, I would say it focused far more on puzzle solving than it did on exploration. And I mean, perhaps it's a personal preference thing, but I much prefer like exploration and mapping out something in my brain than I do trying to solve a puzzle. Like, it just, to me, it would have been more satisfying if there were at least more things where the challenge was to kind of keep everything in your brain of, okay, this was dead end, this is here, oh, this required this, and now I've got it, so I can go back, you know, like that sort of challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always difficult when you're trying to figure out which ways to bring the player into a different experience outside of just, you know, dungeoneering, or outside of just exploration. I think that in this new, I would say this probably this new era of game design for Zelda specifically, you know, I think it's interesting because it felt like they really did need to play test a lot of stuff. They needed they needed to test all of the new physics. They needed to test all of the new ideas that they had. And I think that we're going to see less of these million bajillion ideas being put to test, and a little bit more of like the streamlined good stuff in mm-hmm. the next Breath of the Wild. Not personally, I think, because I mean, there's the collectibles are just unfucking real. There's so many armor pieces, there's so many weapon pieces, but even more so, there's so many shrines, there's so many Korok seeds that it's so overwhelming at times for a lot of players. Too many. Yeah, there's 900 Korok seeds, there's 120 shrines, there's an undocumented amount of pinwheels, I want to say. but even then, it's my understanding, even the pinwheel thing isn't that rewarding. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I feel like they're going to do less of trying to figure out what stuff works, and now that they know what works, be able to work with the better stuff.
Yeah, like on that note, something that I found was weird was like the five times that there was like a mini game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, like, yeah, that's been in Zelda for a long time, but it felt to me really freaking weird to be in like. Like, you clear, what is that place? The island, Eventide. You clear yes. Eventide, and then there's, like, a fucking updraft, gliding, balloon-popping adventure minigame, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and it's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, like, go ride your horse over these little things, and I'll time you. Like, minigames felt extremely weird to me in Breath of the Wild. Maybe it was just a tonal thing, because it's supposed to be so, like, quiet and solitary. But sure. Like, whenever it was like, like I'm just like fucking riding my horse over shit, I'm like, all right, this is weird.
Yeah, well, it's difficult because I think in most Zelda games, the mini games kind of felt a little corny, you know, like,
yeah, but it always kind of fit. Like when Wind Waker does it, it's cute because Wind Waker is cute. When Skyward Sword does it, it's Skyward Sword. So, you know, like it's kind of got that like cartoony aesthetic, which so does Breath of the Wild. But it's like with all the like weird and kooky characters in those games, and like it just felt like a better fit there. Mm-hmm. And in Breath of the Wild, everybody's more or less serious for the most part. So it just kind of felt strange.
Yeah,
to be in this like quiet world, and then this like weird bombast of, you know, fucking riding shield, on the updraft,
shield surfing, updrafting, yeah. Stuff like that.
Like surfing as motion, cool. Shield surfing as minigame felt kind of weird.
I understand that. I respect that. But I mean, my thinking, it's a weird juxtaposition because the story has such an effect on the environment, even though not a lot of people play the game for its story. You know, we, a lot of the most of my playtime, like the my first playthrough was only story, and it was as quick as I could possibly get to the next thing and enjoy just the streamlined story that they give you. But my next playthrough and every playthrough outside of that was figuring out which places were best to explore, you know, taking dungeons one by one, or you know, taking these explorative environments one by one. And it was difficult, but I mean, I don't know, at a certain point you have to understand why, or I mean, you have to bring the story into consideration, because story wise you know, everyone in Hyrule is scattered. It's all divided. Everyone's divided. There's really no central thing, because the central base of the kingdom is destroyed. Like, the Hyrule was taken over. And it, to me, it does feel weird narratively that there are mini games, and then there are like these kooky characters that are just a little bit of like comic relief. Like, I get it, but it still kind of feels a little weird. But I still like it. I think it's I think they're meant to be sort of distractions and like mini games, as they are, like taking a break from the true to heart, like the true, you know, crazy stuff of whatever it's going on. And I don't know.
And to their credit, you don't have to do it. The reward is just rupees, which there are different ways you can get rupees. So like, it really doesn't matter if you're like, that doesn't seem like a fun prospect to me, you can just kind of avoid it. So I don't feel like it didn't impact it. I just thought it was like a weird thing. And it's one of those things where they were just trying everything. And I feel like if they're going to cut some stuff, I think that mini games like that might be something they cut. Because it just, I don't think it added much to the game. And it like, it took development time away from something else that could have been more interesting, you know?
I see that. But I mean, my favorite thing about this game is replayability. It's the fact that, like, you can see a unique moment everywhere and anywhere. You know, it doesn't matter if you're going through just for the story. It doesn't matter if you're going through to try and explore everything. I mean, there are so many impactful moments all over the place, even if it means like one sort of scenic route, you know. And that's probably my favorite thing about it. It's that not only do you have all these different choices and as a player, and you have so much agency, it's that like every moment is going to be so unique, no matter where you go. And that's what I find, like, especially like on the subreddit, like I'll be scrolling through and people are like exploring this new thing for the very first time, and it's like, it's magical every single time, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like interesting for me, because I had a similar experience, but at first, because contrary to how you played it, I played it totally off the wall, totally fucking around the whole time. And after like well over 100 hours, I finally just beat the game, you know? So like while I was playing it that first time, I was super afraid that I was just like, this is not going to be replayable. I have everything figured out, you know? And I was afraid of that. But then, you know, like I finished it and then I put it down for a while. And I came back a few months later and I picked it up and played it again. And like, even as early as the Great Plateau, I was doing shit differently. And like, there are things that you can find that are discoveries that don't have a reward really necessarily. Like, you'll just find an interesting like area that seems to have a little bit of a story to it. And there's no like heart piece or anything you get from that. It's just a personal discovery that you can find this place and it's quiet and there's not much going on. And you're just like, oh, I haven't seen this before. And even beyond that, beyond those minor discoveries that you may have not noticed, like even the Colosseum like Devin mentioned earlier, I don't think you get anything from that. You can go in there. There isn't even a treasure chest. You can just like fight the dudes and get their weapons. And it's like, cool, I got beefier weapons and you can move on. It's like, there are a ton of things that you could miss on your first playthrough and see on your second or even your third, fourth, fifth, however many you want to do. Right. And so even beyond those minor discoveries, there's all the mechanical discoveries of like, well, I can like throw the bomb and then while they're like flopping in the air, I can shoot them with this and then they'll do this. And, you know, messing with the chemistry engine and the physics engine of how to deal with, you know, enemies and challenges and obstacles. And like, there's so many different ways to traverse. And I feel like if anybody's afraid of it not being replayable, just go do it again and maybe take in a new mindset. I know that I had a big change in my mindset when I got more into the cooking as a means to survive. I basically didn't wear any like weather protecting clothing, and I'd be like, all right, cool, well, I'm about to go on this pilgrimage, so I'm about to go out in the mountains, I need these resources to get out there, and so I'm like prepping for this journey I'm about to go on. And just having a different mindset is enough to make it totally replayable.
Oh, for sure. My my current playthrough is no armor, 3 hearts, only drinking elixirs, so I can't even like eat food. It has to be potions.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases I'll even like limit myself to like a particular type of item too, like a particular type of weapon. Imposing these particular challenges is so unique, and it changes the way that you have to think about playing the game. Because like in the first playthrough, you can like get all the armors and you can look cool and you can do all the things that you need to do in order to play the game regularly, if that's possible. But like it's such a unique thing where you can impose a challenge on yourself that doesn't really change the game, and it doesn't, in some cases, doesn't continge on its difficulty, but it makes you think about the game differently.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be challenges. I know I found like a total perspective shift. It was actually kind of funny. I was like, I had totally cleared Breath of the Wild, all the DLC, everything. And then you get the weird ass motorcycle, which is a whole fucking thing in itself. But like, I was just like, cool, I'm going to go on a road trip across Hyrule now. And like the fact that I wouldn't teleport, and I was like using signs to navigate, and I was like, yeah, I'm just going to like ride this bike and get lost. And like, I just found new shit and had a good time. And I was like, all right, like it just takes a difference in perspective sometimes to even just have a totally different experience with this game. So the amount of possibilities are absolutely astronomical,
for sure.
So what do y'all think about the weapon system? Did we talk about that already?
We haven't gotten to it yet, and that is something I wanted to bring up.
That's what I wanted to bring up, because I don't necessarily care for it. I don't like that your weapons break relatively fucking fast. It just kind of devalues getting those cool weapons, and it's almost like I never really want to use those weapons. Because I'm like, okay, well, what if I'm going to, you know, fight someone really strong and I'm going to need that weapon? Well, then I just, you know, I use something that's a little bit more common. Like I might use like a soldier broadsword or whatever. I'll use something a little bit more common and not really ever use those special weapons that are given to me through quests. Cause I'm like, I don't want to lose that. It's a really cool weapon. Why would I use it in use it and lose it? It just doesn't make sense. I want them to definitely change that up. Like have a lot of common weapons that you can get, but those special weapons, I want them to be special, and I want them to like, I mean, you can like make them degrade or something like that, and then you can just go get them repaired.
Yeah, that's, maybe something,
you know,
like that.
That's, I mean, that's basically what everyone does in their games, but I just never cared for the whole, I'm sitting there fighting and I swing and my sword breaks and I'm like, well, fuck, that was like my best sword. And now I really, you know, now I kind of don't have anything to fight with. It just, I didn't care for it.
Yeah, I feel like, and I agree, almost entirely I agree, because I don't hate it as much as a lot of other people do, but in terms of the design, what it did to me, and it's not ideal, is I would see a camp of enemies and go, well, I don't want to fight them. I've got all these really good weapons. They've probably got worse weapons. I'm not going to get anything from fighting them, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to fight anything for the most part. And, you know, I get it. It kind of, ironically, I feel like they wanted to give you regular sort of incentives to fight things. It's like, oh, well, you need to fight things so you can get weapons. You need to fight things so you can get stronger weapons, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, once I have the stronger weapons,
you're just going
to take
there's
no reason to fight anything. Yeah. So like, it becomes an anti-incentive because they're so, you know, they burn up so quickly. And it's just like, well, I've got all these fucking top shelf weapons. I'm just not going to fight anything until I have to. And now you're missing out on a huge chunk of the game at that point.
Yeah. I going back to like the whole dungeons thing, I feel like they could almost, because there's not a lot of forced encounters other than fighting the four divine beasts
mm-hmm.
and Ganon.
Yeah.
Like there's no forced encounter. You can run away from everything and you don't have to fight anything. The only five things that you have to fight are the Ganon forms.
The blights. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of funny because I thought back to this moment I had where I was in Hyrule Castle, and if you go up like the main road, you go through like this little it's like a little tiny outpost. And if you run in there, it like closes the doors and a Lionel falls down, but you can just climb up and out the window and just fuck off. So it's like they like tried to do it, but it didn't really work. So it's like I definitely would have liked more encounters where it's like, all right, I've got my resources, like let's, you know, I have to deal with the situation that's been presented to me in a way that does not involve just fucking off, you know. Mm-hmm. 99% of the time you can just fuck off.
Agreed. And again, the combat's very fun, it's very fluid, but it's kind of, again, on your terms. Like you don't have to fight anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, again, having dungeons where, I mean, the classic thing where it's like, here's five enemies in a room, the door doesn't open until you kill all of them. Just having stuff like that would give a little bit more challenge, and it would just feel more structured as a game, like if you had to go through a dungeon, an actual dungeon.
I mean, if they really wanted to go as far into their roots as they anticipated, I think that doing some more of those classic RPG things, you know, encounters and the like would really, really polish it more so.
We need side scrolling.
I don't know about bringing back Zelda 2.
I mean,
we need side scrolling and we need fucking XP and stats.
Kind of like kind of like how Mario Odyssey did, where like there's some moments where it's they sort of force the camera into, you're on a 2D wall, like you're in a 3D space, but it's 2D. It's a little wonky.
Mm-hmm. If you allow me to get a little theoretical, I had an idea and I did tweet it out. I think Devin saw it. It was I want to see in Breath of the Wild 2 is I want to see playing as Zelda, and the reason I want to see that is because I think that if you did away with the typical combat and made it like a sort of interesting magic system where not only, like, let's say Zelda does magic and like she has a fire spell, it has some puzzle solving components, but it also has some combat components. This is something that I see in Wind Waker, where it's like the boomerang is good at hitting multiple targets to solve a puzzle, but it's also good at stunning enemies, you know? I would love to see something like that where, you know, you're Zelda and you can cast fire and it does this to the chemistry engine and you know, but it also like will do this to the enemies. And I think with the chemistry engine they have in place and like how the game functions, I think it would be more interesting to like play with different magical spells and be like, all right, how does this affect this enemy and how does this affect this enemy? And playing around with that more than just get the biggest number weapon you can and hit the biggest number dude you can find and just do that ad nauseum, you know? Like, I think if there was, I guess, almost a puzzle-solving element, but more of like a discovery element to combat of what's the most effective way to do it, you know? And sometimes it may be a combination of things. Like, I know that, like, you can use ice arrow in Wind Waker again, you can use ice arrows to freeze a dude in place, and then you could just place a bomb at his feet and walk away, and then he'll just fucking explode. You know, just combining things like that. I wish combat was a discovery thing, because there's so much discovery in every other component of the game, in like crafting, like recipes, cooking with the elixirs. There's discovery there, you know. There's geographical discovery where you're trying to find where things are. You know, there's all kinds of discovery in the game, but the combat is not a source of discovery. I think that that's something they could definitely work on.
Right. Maybe if they took elements from both, what was it, Cadence of Hyrule, the Crypt of the Necrodancer sort of refresh, or like the reskin that they did. Fucking amazing game. But when you play as Zelda, you know, all of your stuff is, for the most part, I mean, you still use like melee weapons and such, but your bread and butter is a lot of your defensive, it's a lot of your magic stuff. Same thing with like Super Smash Brothers, right? Like everything is pretty much magic. Whereas like Twilight Princess Zelda, she had like her crazy magic stuff, but she had like a huge like estoc, like a huge like sword with her as well. Like, I feel like if they sort of hybridize some of those fighting styles that previous Zeldas have had, and in this new era of Zelda gameplay, we see being able to play a Zelda in a true canon game, I think that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you did go with a hybrid system like that, you know, the magical half could interact with how the physical half works and vice versa. You know, you might hit someone to open them up and it's like, oh, well, you know, all of that was electric resistant, but now that you've hit an opening, now you can, you know, do something like that. There's even that possibility there, which, you know, might be getting a little complex at that point, but, you know, that's something you could balance. I think at the end of the day, there needs to be more discovery in the combat component, because combat is, to me, probably the most disappointing thing about the game by and large, because there's not a lot of discovery there. You figure out how to do it and then you just do it 100 million times.
Yeah.
Maybe. If there was discovery there, I think it would wildly improve the game.
Oh yeah. And I mean, maybe if they even did like how Four Swords approached combat, where like the whole game is centered around you using multiple iterations of yourself to solve problems. Like, it requires two people to open this door, so if NPC Zelda is gonna help you open that door while you slash a couple of goblins and then take care of the door, then that's one thing. Or like, if you're Zelda and you have to, you know, do like a whole bunch of different like magic puzzle shit while Link defends you or something like that, you know, I feel like they can balance that stuff very, very well, and they've done it before with Four Swords and Triforce Heroes and all that. I think it's definitely possible, and I'm very excited for what they might have in store if they decide to go that route.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that, to me, that feels like it might be a little too complex for a game as large as this, just in my experience, because Four Sword was like stage-based. It was built around solving puzzles in a linear fashion in this like kind of confined, strictly defined environment. This,
right.
I don't know if it would work as well in Breath of the Wild, but I do think that at the very least, if we had just more thought that went into a lot of the situations, because a lot of them are kind of like solved, especially when it comes to combat, it's just kind of solved. It's like, all right, this is the best approach. I know it is, you know, being creative is almost stifled because, you know, it's like, I can get creative with like magnesis and bombs and shit, and it just doesn't do as much damage as coming in and wailing on a dude. So,
right.
I don't know. I feel like if we added, basically I'm saying inject discovery and exploration into every component of this game you possibly can, and I think it would be a lot better. But yeah, that might just be me.
I agree for sure. I mean, especially in combat, like because that was a good point that you made as well. The things that you do with Magnesis and the things that you do with like bombs and all your Sheikah runes, they're creative, but they're like a means to an end. Like there are means to eventually you take out your steel sword that does 28 damage a tick and just start wailing on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a means to an end, and if they streamline just like everything operates in physics and it all operates creatively, you know, maybe you can have better stuff than just the bombs, you know. I'm interested to see what they do next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Is that everything?
That's most of what I wanted to talk about for Breath of the Wild. I did see one thing that just piqued my interest a little off topic was there's a, I want to say it's an emulator that allows you to do Wii U games, and people have been able to do an emulator of Breath of the Wild for the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they're able to play Breath of the Wild in like 4K with like RTX on and like a whole bunch of crazy, yep, whole bunch of crazy nonsense. And
I mean, you've never seen the mods where you can, the one I always remember is you can, you're Woody, and when you pull out your glider, it's Buzz Lightyear. he's just like holding, letting you float down.
I've seen a couple mods like that before where it's like just like some stuff just looks better and all that, but like that's just fucking ridiculous.
But yeah, that happened very, very quickly. A lot of people I know were like, well, I could play it on the Switch, or I could play it on the Wii U, or I could play it on my PC in 4K. So
yeah,
you know, that happened pretty quickly.
Oh man. But and anyway, if that's all, is that all that we have for today?
I think so.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I think I'm satisfied.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Stay tuned for more, where we're gonna continue this series, not next week, but the week after. We're gonna do a little bit of stuff in between our Zelda hits. So this was Breath of the Wild. If you'd like to hear more, you can follow us on social media for more updates. We're on Twitter at @Tombstone_pod, Instagram at @Tombstone_podcast. You can leave us a good review on Apple Podcast, which would be very helpful. But you can also check us out on Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, Overcast, and a few others. We're mainly distributed from Anchor. That's our baby daddy. You can go to anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast. And if you'd like to even make monetary donations, we absolutely accept those at anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast/support. Thanks, everybody, and I believe we will see you next time.
All right. Peace, everyone.